mindfulness is about noticing. It's about awareness, right? And so how can we unlearn racist ideas if we don't even notice them, right? So we have to bring that up to the surface so that we can unlearn and change our attitudes and our behaviors. And so a lot of that does not look like sitting by ourselves, reading all the books, you know, in isolation. It looks like doing work in community.
Welcome to the Homeschool CEO Podcast, the podcast dedicated to entrepreneurs who want to successfully homeschool their kids while running a profitable business. In this podcast, we'll reveal the truth of what it really looks like behind the scenes of an entrepreneur who homeschools and how to make it all work. If you're an entrepreneur who currently homeschools or you want to start, you are in the right place, my friend. With 16 years experience combining entrepreneurship with homeschooling, I'm your host, Jen Myers, and this is the Homeschool CEO Podcast. Do you want to raise an anti-racist child? Me too. But if you're like me, sometimes we may not know the exact thing to say or do. Today's guest is a racial equity strategist, executive racial equity coach. She's an anti-racism trainer and speaker by trade, as well as a homeschool mom. Dr. Monet is going to chat with us today about what we can do to be authentic leaders and really take the next steps on how we can raise an anti-racist child by first being an anti-racist parent and leader. So without further ado, let's dive in. All right, ladies, we have an incredible guest here with us today, and I think you're going to be really surprised on some of the things she has to say. To put a little backstory, we met online as the result of a Facebook Live, right? I think it was one of our Meet the Members. I think we were interviewing Jacqueline, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think your sister introduced you to us.
Yeah, sister-in-law, yeah.
Oh, yes, I'm super excited. We've done a coffee chat, and I was so inspired by the things that we talked about that I wanted to just bring it to everybody because I think this is a really important topic. So Dr. Monet, it is such an honor to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
All right. Can you tell our audience a little bit about you, your backstory, how you got started?
Sure. So as she said, my name's Dr. Monet, and I'm a racial equity strategist, an anti-racism trainer, and I'm also a 500-hour certified yoga teacher. And I have just had many experiences in the workforce and out of the workforce and nonprofit and homeschool mom and stay-at-home mom. And just recently, I launched my own business where I'm doing racial equity consulting, anti-racism training with a mindfulness twist. And it just feels that all of my worlds are colliding because I'm doing all of my passions in one swoop, really. You know what I mean? It's like I've formed this business model around my passions, and it's a flexible business model so that I can still homeschool my children. So I'm just most grateful for the work I do. I have a background in organizational climate research. So I work with organizations primarily, but then I also do trainings for yoga studios, just because that's an easy fit. I've been doing yoga for 18 years, so a lot of people in that space know me for my racial equity work. And then I just do some long-term consulting gigs, you know, 6 months to a year with organizations. And then I just do some one-off trainings as well with organizations. And especially after the murder of George Floyd, I got really, really busy with organizations really wanting to give anti-racism the attention that it deserves. So that's what I do.
It does deserve attention. And that's why we're talking about it. Rather than shying away from those hard topics, we want to just dig deep into them. I'm so happy that there are people in this world that are doing this type of work that can lead those of us that we're looking for answers and we want help. And, you know, we're digging, we're looking on Google. You know, I think after the murder of George Floyd, something that really came out was, and I always want to be mindful of, you know, everybody that's going to be listening on both,
you know, of every different skin color, religion, all different diversities. And one of the things was, we just wanted to ask other people, like, just give us the answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a hard thing. And one of my good friends who is Black, she said, don't ask a person just because their skin color is one color or another. Mm-hmm. Like, go look it up, do the work. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I agree with that. I think that, you know, oftentimes white people, they want the checklist. Or, yeah. You know, the big question that I got was like, give me the best book list, like all the books that I can read. Or yeah. After the murder of George Floyd, I also got random Facebook messages and text messages from white friends apologizing and, you know, all these different emotions that were bubbling up for them. And I do believe that it's up to all of us to do the work required for anti-racism, because what we don't understand and what I teach in my trainings is that, you know, white supremacy is the sea we all swim in, you know, just by nature of being born in the United States. You know, I'm a sociologist, my PhD is in sociology. So I often talk about like how we get socialized, right? So the number one thing, probably not for most of us because we choose to homeschool, but if you send your children to public schools, there will be a lot of information about history that they will not receive. Right, about race and about racism going back to 1619. And so just by nature of being born here, you know, racism affects us all. And we all have the work of unlearning the racist messages that we are told. Because oftentimes when I teach, you know, implicit racial bias trainings, people are so unaware that they have racist ideas. And so when people say, well, how do you tie anti-racism to yoga? And I say, well, because mindfulness is about noticing. It's about awareness, right? And so how can we unlearn racist ideas if we don't even notice them, right? So we have to bring that up to the surface so that we can unlearn and change our attitudes and our behaviors. And so a lot of that does not look like sitting by ourselves, reading all the books, you know, in isolation. It looks like doing work in community. So any training that I teach the four R's, which are reflection, relationships, restoration, and resilience. And I believe that all of those are important to doing what I call authentic anti-racism work. Right. And that is the anti-racism work that is beyond just a fancy social media post. It's about the way we live. It's about the way we interact with each other. And even as homeschool moms, you know, we teach from this place of like superiority, you know, like I know and I'm going to teach you. But anti-racism says it's not about power hoarding. It's about power sharing. And so that is a pedagogy thing, right? And oftentimes we're not even aware that that's oppressive to tell people what to do, you know, versus trusting their own agency and power sharing and realizing that even the homeschool mom to child relationship is a relationship of mutual benefit and of teachable moments on both ends. And so there's a lot of digging and there's a lot of layers to the work I do.
Yeah. And it's hard work.
Yeah.
Like it's not, like you said, it's not a book checklist. It's not, we're going to follow one social media guru and that's going to solve all of this because we're all planted in the seeds.
Yep.
That's something that we talked a lot about over the summer in the homeschool CEO community. And that was some hard conversations and we just had them and we were open and we did that in community and we all have so much to go, you know, even like you said, the first step is just the reflection. And what is one way that we can become more aware of the things that we're not currently aware of?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is, you know, this implicit bias thing. And oftentimes we're not aware, but we can kind of see how implicit bias shows up in our attitudes and also the way we interpret events. And oftentimes these are not things that will like come out. You know, sometimes people don't say them, but they're in their head. For example, if, you know, a white woman walking down the street, man of color approaching, you know, she'll clutch her purse and it's just like almost instinctual. But that's just one way of being like, what was I thinking about him? What was I taught? And then it's like you have to do a lot of digging, because a lot of times, again, I'm a sociologist, and people will share with me after we do some digging that a lot of these messages they inherited from their parents or their grandparents. For example, I have another white friend who's actually my yoga philosophy mentor and teacher. He's a white guy. And when we were talking about implicit racial bias, he comes to my workshops. And he just shared how, you know, he said, you know, I rent an apartment in DC, he said, because I don't want the, you know, burden of, you know, having to care for my house and like doing all the maintenance. And so he said he was having that conversation with his wife. And then they went out for a walk. And he lives in like upper northwest DC. So this is a very, very rich part of DC. So he says he looks over and he sees a black guy like working on a house. And then he says to his wife, like, see, like, if we owned a house, we'd have to hire somebody like him. But that's implicit racial bias, because maybe that man wasn't hired. Maybe that was his house. But because they were in a very, very rich upper class neighborhood in DC, he assumed that this man did not own this home, that he was a hired worker. And he told me, he said, I just felt so guilty about it. And I said, but listen, you have come to an awareness of this and it stops there, right? This becomes a problem if you were to approach this man and say, hey, you know, I want to hire you next. That is when it goes into that, crosses the line of a racist attitude, right? Because you're assuming. But if it's in your head, and we all have implicit racial bias, I teach that as well. You know, in sociology, we believe that that's normal. You know, that's the brain's way of protecting itself. But when it translates to attitudes and behaviors, that's when it's harmful. It will be harmful to that man. It's harmful to my friend to have such limited thinking, to not even be open to the idea that this man could own this home, or, you know. And so I think that becoming one way to be aware is, you know, just begin to question. You know, in yoga, we call it self-study and we call it self-inquiry. And in my trainings, we do a lot of journal writing. Like one of the things I say is like what you'll need for this training, you know, journal, water, open mind, open heart, because you're going to start to question yourself. And I think that that work is extremely important, because what people are calling for, especially white people, they're kind of calling for this external mark that says, I'm not racist. But the internal work is the most important work. The internal work, because that shines through. You know, that really does shine through. And so, you know, it's just a journey. I always say it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. And you said something that I want to kind of touch base on, because I heard it repeated over and over in our community over the summer. Women would say, I'm not racist. I teach my kids to be colorblind. And for a long time, I said that same thing, because I don't think we talked about this before, but I have a double major in psychology and sociology, which my professors always thought was crazy, because I could see both sides. I could see how our, you know, the individual impacts the surrounding environment and vice versa. But can we talk a little bit about why it's not okay to just be not racist, and why we need to be anti-racist and be teaching our kids to be anti-racist? But, you know, like we talked about, it starts with us as parents.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I think, you know, the issue with, you know, I'm not racist, is that racism has three forms, which I talk about in my training: internalized, interpersonal, and systemic racism. And so when people say I'm not racist, what they're really saying is they think that on the interpersonal level, they're not racist. So they say things like, I'm nice, or in the yoga community, I'm vegan, or I've never used the N word, so I can't be racist. But we're talking about many different layers. So we're also talking about systemic racism, where we have policies and procedures in place that maintain racial hierarchy, and some people reinforce those policies and procedures in their hiring and their recruitment and many different things like that. So we have a lot of layers. And it's and the thing about saying I'm not racist is that it has this implication of neutrality. But again, systemic racism, white supremacy is the sea we all swim in. So unless we are strategic and we go against what we have been taught, then there is no neutral, because the neutral is racist ideas and ideologies. So that's why we say anti-racism, because you have to go against that. So what does that mean? For example, if you have you're teaching your child, you know, about history, and then you teach them Christopher Columbus because that's a part of the curriculum, right? That would be neutral. You don't have to do any extra work. You just read the curriculum, you just teach them, and that's it. But going against that would be, what really happened in 1619? Let's ask some questions. Let's read Stamped from the Beginning, for example, Ibram Kendi's book about history. Let's look at some other sources. And see, anti-racism is really about critical thinking, which, you know, we say that we stress this in homeschooling, but we need to stress it even more, because what we're taught most of the time, and this goes back to I'm not racist, we're taught this binary thinking of good and bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and so what anti-racism is like, you know, there's this area in the middle where it's full of paradoxes. It's kind of messy. It's not all going to make sense, but we have to go against what we've been taught and what we've learned, especially from our families and even in some religious institutions where hierarchy is reinforced. And so I don't think it's enough to say I'm not racist, because again, it's some neutrality there. But being anti-racist is saying that I'm willing to take a stand, and I'm willing to go against systemic racism, interpersonal racism, internalized racism. So it's a lot of work there to be done, a lot of layers to it.
So where can our moms start? So, you know, maybe they're sitting there and they're listening to us and they're like, I want to be anti-racist. You know, they have that desire. It's planted in them, but they don't know what the next step would be.
Yeah, sure. So I will leave my information, because I do teach courses, and I have one that's starting this month. The last day to enroll is January 15th, but it's called How to Be an Authentic Anti-Racist Leader. And who is this for? This is for CEOs, this is for business owners, but this is also for parents, because we are leaders. We have children that are looking up to us, right? And so we make decisions for them every single day until they're old enough to make decisions for themselves. And so when people say, you know, I want to teach my child how to be anti-racist, I say, Mom, Dad, you have to start with yourself. Because yes, they are like little sponges. And you know, even sometimes, you know, we haven't had a lot of gathering this year, but one of the critical times where racism is perpetuated is at Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner. Someone will make a racist joke. And if the little boy or girl doesn't see mom or dad interrupt that racist joke, then they might think that that's funny, you know? And so I think that the parents, a course like mine, I think, is unique because I'm coming also from a mindfulness place. And one of the things that, you know, I'm a PhD, so I'm a professor, so I teach. I really do teach. And I know that a lot of homeschool moms, they homeschool because they love to learn, right? There will be some self-reflection in that. And I also think that a course is important because you're on a journey along with other people. And so like when you're sitting there by yourself, like reading a book, you know, you have the same limited mind and the lens that, you know, you're reading the book. And I think the books are great, but I also think that books are great if it's coupled with like a book club, or if it's coupled with some type of community where you can share, you can learn, you can grow, and maybe you'll even find that some of the guilt, because I've noticed a lot of white guilt. People will have feelings and thoughts, and they think it's just them. And then someone else in the group will say, you know, that same thing happened to me, and I used to think that. And then automatically, they can identify in, and they can see that change is possible. So I think a great place to start is with community. And I often tell people, like, if you can't afford a course or to work with a trained, someone who's trained in this, then, you know, grab a book, but form a book club so you can bounce ideas off and you're not in isolation with this stuff, because a lot of this embodied in experience, right? What I'm teaching in How to Be an Authentic Anti-Racist Leader is this art of courageous conversations. And when we learn this art of courageous conversations, we can have those with our children, but we have to be able to have them with other adults first and get comfortable talking about race. Because I used to always joke and say, like, talking about race to your kids is like talking about puberty. You know, mom, parents don't like to do it, but it's a necessary conversation if we are to prepare our children to be successful in this world. You know, I just think it's a necessary ingredient to personal growth, and as well as a necessary ingredient to re-socializing.
I agree 100%. I have two questions.
Sure.
One, can you give us an example of a courageous conversation? What would that kind of look like?
Sure. So typically, and I didn't make that up, the courageous conversations model was developed in the 90s. So it's a framework. But basically, any conversation that's difficult, you start with certain guidelines, and then you guide that conversation through. So an example could be, so after the murder of George Floyd, a lot of employers didn't even know how to start a conversation with their employees, right? So if they were trained on courageous conversations, the day after George Floyd, they might bring small groups together. They might start with the guidelines, and then they might just open it up and they'll put the topic. So it's just, you know, how I'm feeling after the murder of George Floyd. And then they, you know, just begin to talk about it, hold space. And then people say, well, I'm tired, I'm grieving. And they might probe and say, well, where do you feel that in your body? Or what are you going to do? Or what do you need from us in terms of support? So I know people say like a safe space. And it's sort of that model, but it's also a brave space where people feel empowered to really share what they want, share where they are. Another example, and I've done a lot of courageous conversations. I did one on COVID-19, and that one was all virtual. It ended up being really big. So we did, we talked about the problem, and then we figured out solutions. And we were able to come together in the community to donate to some of the students who didn't have laptops and didn't have supplies. I've done another one on what women want, right? And, you know, do white women and women of color want the same things? Let me think of some other ones. I did another one in the community pre-COVID called On the Table. And each table at the restaurant had a different topic that they had to discuss. So basically it's a model of like getting people more comfortable talking about race and kind of working through that discomfort. So almost any topic pertaining to race is fair game.
Why do you think that we struggle so much to have that conversation?
Because we're not used to it. And there's a lot of shame and there's a lot of hiding. And there's also, like I said, you know, when we don't learn about it. So if you think about, and honestly, you know, the history of race in this country is pretty hurtful. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a topic that brings up a lot of good feelings. So just like any topic that brings up the past of hurt, of pain, of oppression, of guilt, of confusion, you know, I even have like one of my white friends, she always says, I feel so bad because, you know, my grandfather owned slaves, right? But I don't know if she knows that my fifth great grandfather owned 74 enslaved people, right? And I'm, you know, I'm Black. So I think that race is such a difficult topic because it's just hurtful. It's just painful. And it's inhumane.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we don't want to talk about that. But here's the thing. It continues to harm because we don't talk about it. So we have to name it to tame it. And that's why for, you know, every year in my career with this, I kind of focus on one thing, you know, and for a year or so, I've really focused on those courageous conversations. And I'm still focusing on that. But now my focus is on leadership. But those courageous conversations are extremely important. And sometimes people will attend a courageous conversation and just be like, Dr. Monet, I just enjoy being able to talk about that. I've never been able to talk about that with anybody else. You know what I mean? So it's freeing to be able to release, you know, and be able to talk so that we can start talking about some solutions as well.
That's true. Because if we never talk about the problem, if we aren't courageous enough to deal with, like, to identify it, how on earth are we ever going to find a solution that lasts, you know, rather than just putting a Band-Aid on the problem because we don't go deep enough?
You're right. You're right. Yeah. You are so right. Yeah.
I was just thinking, like, that just caused me to kind of pause for a minute and think how often we just want the solution. Like, we don't want to talk about it, but we don't really find a solution that works.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think, you know, I know you and I had talked about this previously, a lot of the homeschooling community tends to be conservative white Christians. Mm-hmm. That is changing. Thankfully, that is not, but that's a huge part of it. So we have to go the extra mile. Mm-hmm. If we want to include diversity in a lot of our, you know, like one of my other friends, we talked about co-op and we quit doing co-ops a long time ago, mostly because it just didn't align with our time schedule. But in our church, we switched churches because there was zero diversity. In fact, we watched a Black family come to church. One, they visited one service. We welcomed them, but they felt so uncomfortable. You know, like as a family, you could just tell, like, they were the only Black family and they left. And I looked at my husband and I'm like, no, mm-hmm. this is not for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And there've been a lot of stories like that. And that is anti-racism because that is being strategic, making a different decision, changing churches. I've heard people change neighborhoods. I mean, I've changed neighborhoods. I live in Pennsylvania. And when we first moved to this town, we didn't know, you know, where to live. And once we figured out where we were living was predominantly white, and then we found more diversity, we moved, just because we know that that's a part of what we want our children to see, and representation matters. So that's a wonderful example of anti-racism, because being neutral would have been like, well, I'm not racist, so I can just stay here. But, you know, going against the grain is saying, I want to do something different. I want my children to see something different, and I want a different experience, you know, in being in community, because religious institution is a really big part of how people build community.
You know, it is. Awesome. It's huge.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the homeschool communities, because, you know, we're looking to do things like the extracurricular activities and the, you know, whether we're in a church or co-ops, you know, like we're looking for those extra things. And I would just challenge all of our parents that are listening, you know, to actively seek out diversity in those programs that you put your kids in, because you're going to find what you're looking for. And you can do the easy route and say, nope, all of these people are just like me, because, you know, like attracts like. Mm-hmm. So you have to go the extra mile to find something that's different from who you are.
Right.
Right?
I agree. Absolutely agree.
This has been such a great conversation.
Yeah.
Tell our parents again how they can get enrolled in your course so that they can start doing that inner work for themselves, so then that they're better equipped to lead their kids.
Sure. So we can leave the link in the show notes, right, Jen? Yeah. Okay. But if you want to reach out to me directly, just send me an email. My email is monet.tamara@gmail.com, and that's monea.tamara@gmail.com. And my online school is called Authentic Anti-Racism, and that is drmonetllc drmoneellc.com. So that's drmoneellc.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And yes, we'll put the link on social media. We'll put them in the show notes so everybody will have easy access to that. We'll send it out in the emails, because this is something that if you're serious about doing this, then this is something that you want to look into for sure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been fantastic.
My pleasure.
Did you enjoy today's episode? I know I sure did. It really made me pause and think. In fact, if you know any other moms, particularly if they're entrepreneurs, but let's be real, even if they're not entrepreneurs, I think all of us as moms can benefit from today's episode. Would you share this with them? Because how they raise their kids may just change an entire generation. And together, we can have impact far beyond just our own families. Also, if you're serious about doing that deep inner work that it takes to really be an authentic anti-racist leader, join me as I learn from Dr. Monet starting in January. Her course starts in just a couple of weeks, but registration closes this week. To learn how you can join me as I join Dr. Monet, visit the show notes at homeschoolceopodcast.com/41 to learn more. See you next week.
Hey friend, I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in today. If you loved what you heard, please be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. I really appreciate it. And for more information on connecting with other homeschool CEOs just like you, be sure to check out our website at www.homeschoolceo.com. And as always, Team Homeschool CEO, you ladies inspire me. Thank you for always showing others what is possible. You guys are awesome. See you next week.